This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
One of the more underrated lines in Major League is when Vaughn gives up the grand slam on opening day, drills the next guy, and Euchre goes, "About time, it's 8-0. 800-919-3776. It's Carlin in for Dave on DCR here on 98.7 ESPN. Now, Rick, I can give you the detailed breakdown of the five-minute recap I just watched of the Islanders Flyers last night, or you could take this and just absolutely control everything and fill us in on everything that happened. How about
that? No, this is all your fault. I mean, this is what it comes down to. It's all your fault.
Again, I didn't bring it up. You did. You did. And we have tape evidence of that. So, you know, go tell
allegedly
all your little friends
fault.
Who were
no,
buzzing at
my
you
fault.
Yesterday. I own it. I own it. I wear
That's
it.
A good point. I mean,
be
you
like
do wear
Garrett
it.
Cole the other night. I'm wearing it.
Yeah, and I am getting a little bit comfortable. I would agree with that. No, I mean, it was a game that, I mean, they fought all the way back, tied it up at 3, had a couple unbelievable opportunities in overtime. Hart made a couple great saves, made one on Toews, and then, you know, Nelson has the breakaway to end it. And then, and I'm sure it'll be on the video today, is Nelson's lines out there. They go down. They don't get the puck deep. They've already been on the ice for a while. Don't get the puck deep. Turn it over. Ends up back down the defensive end, down in the defensive zone. Leddy has plenty of time to make a play. Ends up icing it, so now they're stuck on the ice. Long shift, face off. They have another chance. Nelson to Beauvillier. Puck goes back to the point, and then, you know, what the Flyers have had success, you know, with recently when they do have success is going low to high, you know, and getting point shots through, and you know, puck gets deflected in front, and now we're headed to a game six. It was like prom night. That was like prom night. Everyone gets their first. Oh, Giroux, you haven't scored. Okay, we'll give you your first, and then Van Riemsdyk, we'll give you your first. Niskanen, we can have. You know, you can have your first. I mean, much more successful than my prom night, I can promise you that.
Rico, I wanted to ask you about that challenge at the beginning of the second period where Barzal was camped out in the Flyers' net. What did you make of that situation?
That's a good goal. I mean, again, AV with the challenges. I mean, again, that's the you challenge it and you're wrong. All of a sudden, now you're back on the – you're killing a penalty. But he was pushed in. He got stuck in. You know, Bailey makes a heads-up play to throw it back towards the front of the net.
Well, the bigger argument there is, did he give enough effort to try to get out, right?
Well, I mean, he gave enough effort. I mean, he gave enough effort for the goal to count. I mean, he's tangled up in front, and I mean, it's not him locked up. I mean, it wasn't him that was all tangled up with Carter Hart. It was his own teammate.
Mm-hmm. No. I understand that. But that was at least, again, what I took away from my five-minute recap. Did it look like he gave enough effort? But, yeah, listen, it looked like a good goal. It didn't have any problem with it, but that was the only thing I saw. The other thing, Rick, you know, the Barzal thing, I mean, that's just
scary.
Ridiculous. Speaking of scary, absolutely scary.
Well, that, I mean, you again, fingers crossed. I mean, I haven't talked to anybody to see how he is. You know, you saw the blood, but that was, I mean, the first thing I thought was what happened to Brian Berard when he got the stick in the eyeball. Like, that was close to hitting him directly in his eye, and he's wearing a shield. I mean, that's as scary as it gets. Hopefully he's back and he'll be all right. But,
I was going to ask you, who's going to be more important for their team in Game 6? Barzal or
Couturier. I would probably say Couturier. I mean, you have Pageot step in, but Barzal's the most, I mean, he's the best offensive player that the Islanders have, but they have enough depth where I think they could survive. I'm hoping Barzal will be back. I mean, as long as his eye checks out and there's no swelling and everything else, I would imagine he'll be back, but, I mean.
Because neither one of them came back last night, right?
No, Barzal, you got, I mean, there's, like, I got hit in the eye, like, Sidney Crosby, his stick went through my cage and hit me in the eyeball, and like, initially, I couldn't see, so they took me off, and then, you know, I started to get my vision back, and I was like, oh, can I go back in? They said, no, you can't, we still have to do, like, you have to make sure there's no, you know, swelling in the eye, we have to do pressure tests and everything else. So I would imagine that's probably some of the stuff that they were doing. You know, what, don't, God forbid, rush him back and something terrible happens until they actually have, you know, test results and everything else. But, and then the other play in that game was when Carter Hart decides to catch the puck behind the net. I mean, he's going to block a dump in around the glass, ends up catching it, and then the referee allows him to skate back into his crease and blows the whistle. It doesn't give him a penalty, which had Islanders fans irate, because that should be a penalty. Letter of the law, that's a penalty. But I mean, I think at that point the referees don't want to make it about them, so they gave him a warning. Which is unfair, because he had plenty of time to drop the puck and play it, but I mean, I guess in that situation, it's a tie game in overtime that you don't want to make.
You don't want to make that call be the reason why.
Exactly.
You know, one team ends up winning the game.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Now, based on what we've seen so far, I have very little concerns about them in game six, because I do think they've been an incredibly resilient team so far. They've been very good. Now, they haven't faced a game seven or anything like that yet, but they do have a resilient nature about them where I don't feel like this is going to get away from them all of a sudden just because they lost game five the way they did, especially the fact that they came back and forced it to overtime to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, they have to feel good about themselves. I mean, that wasn't their best. I mean, again, that wasn't their best game. And it's funny, like, you know, reading tweets and everything else, like, you know, Trott said, you know, the last game wasn't a great game. What would this game be? I mean, Allen was tweeting that kind of stuff. I mean, let's remember that. I mean, the Philadelphia Flyers are the number one seed in the playoffs in the Eastern side for a reason. Mm-hmm. Like, they get paid to play, too. So there will be times when they make you look like you're not having a good game. That's what happens. That's the nature of professional sport. But the fact is that the Islanders always find a way to put themselves back in, especially in the third periods, where they've dominated in third periods. So, no, I'm not concerned at all. And they had plenty of chances. When they had chances to end it in overtime, they actually had chances to extend the lead when they were up one. And Hart made some big saves in big moments.
Yeah, we always know this, though, Rico. The closeout game is always the hardest. And you can see that last night, Philadelphia was awful scrappy. So, I mean, I don't think that game six is going to be any easier than game five was for the Islanders.
But you know how that is. I mean, it's different in football just because it's you know, it's one and done. But, you can sit there in a locker room before a game. I mean, when you're up 3-1 in a series and you can, you know, yell and scream that, you know, we have to match their desperation, we have to match their intensity. It's not.
It's next to impossible to do.
Yeah.
It is. It just is. So, I mean, I mean, this has been a great series, though, man. Back and forth. It looked like, you know, the Isles were going to run away with it. But you told us early on in this series, like, Philadelphia is not going away. You like the matchup, but they're not going to go away.
No, they're not going to go away. No, absolutely not. I mean, there's too much talent. They're too good of a team. And the only thing that would scare you a little bit is that guys that haven't chipped in offensively finally got their feet wet last night. Like, Giroux finally scored. You could tell how frustrated he was, and he finally scored. Van Riemsdyk finally scored. So, I mean, that makes you a little bit nervous. Like, the last thing you want to do is have those guys all of a sudden wake up.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it was another one of those games where a couple mistakes cost you. I mean, really, you got a bad pinch. Pelech makes a bad pinch. That cost you. And then you had, you know, Brassard makes that, you know, that turnover in the defensive zone. And, you know, Niskanen, Hayes picks it off, and Niskanen ends up burying it in the back of your net. So I'm sure that Trotz will have them ready. I have no concern about that.
Is it just a foregone conclusion that it'll be Greiss in game six?
No, it's not going to be Greiss. It'll be Varlamov again.
You think it will? Okay.
Yeah. The only reason Greiss played was
talking about the other day, the fact that these teams are all going back and forth here.
Well, only on back-to-backs.
Okay.
And Varley played good. I mean, that was a good shot. The third goal was a good shot. I mean, I know people looked at that goal, but that's a perfectly placed shot just over his pad far side. So, no, I would imagine that. I mean, Varley's a starting goalie. As good as Greiss played, the reason why he played was because it was back-to-back games.
800-919-3776. We got some lines open. Let's hit them. Don in Smithtown has been patient on this, waiting to get through on the aisles. Don, what's going on, bud?
Hey, guys, what's going on? Ricky, listen, I don't understand how a referee can't call that delay a game. That's as black and white as shooting the puck over the glass with no tip. I mean, for them to call.
Well, it's not as black and white. That is not as black and white. I mean, black and white is the puck goes over the glass, it doesn't touch anything. That's clearly a penalty.
Well, that's as light gray as you can get then, because that's right on the line. I mean, I don't know. They call a weak trip on Matt Martin, first of all. He barely touched him. And then they go, and he does that. They swallow their whistles. How many times have you been called for that in your lifetime?
A lot. Almost every single time.
A lot. Exactly. Right. So all of a sudden, in round two of the playoffs, they're not going to call Carter Hart on that.
Well, that's because you just said it. I mean, it's a closeout game for the Islanders. They have a chance to end the series. The game is tied. It's in overtime. I mean, that call is, you want to say it's black and white in, you know, the way I get called on it usually was penalized for it. But, I mean, that's still up to the interpretation of, you know, if the referee wants to give him a warning or not. And I think that situation, he didn't want to be the reason why he calls that penalty and then the Islanders score. And now we're talking about, you know, the referee making that call.
All right, I guess I get that. That's fair.
And you know what the thing is, too, is the way, I will say this for the referee, the way that Carter Hart reacted to the puck actually being in his glove, because that's not easy. Like, you go, like, there were plenty of times, and I did it too much, because you're not supposed to really go out when the puck's in the glass, because it could take a bad bounce, that you go out and you just try to put your body in front of it and you just hope you knock it down. The fact that you could tell the way he reacted that ended up in his glove, he was like, oh, no, that's not what I was looking for. And then he panicked and skated to his crease. But listen, I'm biased here. I mean, yeah, I would have liked to have seen a penalty call, but I understand why they didn't.
800-919-3776. Earl in Brooklyn next, 98.7 ESPN. Earl, what's going on?
Hey, gentlemen, I hope everything is well with you and your family. I just got a question with the way Chapman pitched. Those guys in Tampa Bay, they're not pitching that jerk's head. They're throwing high and tight, chest high. Different than throwing high and tight at the head. Totally different. Chris, I just want your opinion. Thanks, guys.
Me, yeah, Chris, Chris? I think you.
I think you might have been talking about me. Or you might have been talking to you. I don't know, but I'm going to answer it anyway. I think there's clearly a difference in the way that the Rays have been pitching the Yankees versus what Chapman did. Like, what Chapman did was crossing the line yesterday. I thought he went right up to it on those at-bats with Wendell and Meadows, but the one with Brissell, that just can't happen. Now, you can't do that. You can't throw 101 mile per hour fastball at a guy's head. You just can't do it. Too many things can go wrong under those circumstances. So, I mean, there's clearly a difference, but I think that it was clear that the Yankees were trying to send a message, and Chapman was trying to send a message. Like, if you're going to throw high and tight at my guys, I'm going to go throw high and tight at your guys. The only difference is I can throw 101 miles per hour.
Yeah.
That was the message.
I get people trying to sell this idea that I've had a lot of people tweeting this at me and all this. The idea that Chapman wasn't trying to do anything, that he's just wild and out of control. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, come on.
That was not what.
Let me ask you guys a question. Do you think that the guys in the Yankees clubhouse are upset at Chapman for doing that last night?
I think some of them are. I got to be honest. For the Brasseau thing specifically, if you're going to throw high and tight, that's one thing. But you are not the one. Like, this was always the big argument with Clemens back in the day and the Mets. And he finally had to come to the plate. Torrey didn't love that at all because it put the Yankees in some peril. And I think this is an instance where if you're Chapman, you may have put your teammates in a little bit of peril here.
Rico?
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. To your original point, as far as, you know, Chapman's control, I mean, and someone actually tweeted, like, you guys obviously aren't watching every single... Yeah, we have. I mean, he's only pitched a handful of times so far this season. Last night was not one of those nights where he did not have control of his pitches. I mean, he was sharp last night.
Yes, he was.
Uh-huh. And he was trying... I mean, he sent a message last night that enough was enough. And he took it too far. I mean, that last pitch at 101 over someone's head is too far. That's unacceptable. And I think he's going to pay the price. And if I'm his teammates, I'm probably more upset that it could end up costing him games. Like, that he could get suspended. Because he's an important part of that. And he's an important piece of that team. I wouldn't want to lose him. But as far as being, I mean, nervous that there's going to be retribution, I mean, they've been pitching all the Yankees high and tight anyway, and it hasn't stopped. Maybe now finally it'll stop.
Let's hit Jonathan in Queens next, 98.7 ESPN. Jonathan, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I'm sorry to change the subject and the topic on you, but I really want to ask you guys, because I've been thinking about this all morning. If one of the LA teams I'm changing it to the NBA playoffs. If one of the LA teams is going to make it to the finals, which we can assume one of them will, who do you think has a better chance to beat them? Will it be Boston or Miami? And I know both series are far from over, but I just wanted to see your guys' take. Thank you, guys.
Neither. I think the NBA finals is going to be the Western Conference finals.
Yeah, I
of the teams, though, I think I would probably lean Boston.
Yeah, because Boston probably has more depth. I would probably say Boston as well. But either one of them, I don't think they're going to beat either LA team. I just don't.
I know they haven't played well. Are we tossing Milwaukee aside entirely too quickly here?
I mean,
yeah, I would agree with that.
I'm not, though. I mean, I've said it. I think Milwaukee is vulnerable. I mean, you know, Giannis, the guy that's supposed to be their best player, the guy who's going to have the ball at the end of the games, he can't shoot. And on top of that, he's struggling at the free throw line. Like there's reason to be concerned. And the way that the Miami Heat play defense, especially transition defense, they're not going to let the Bucks get up and down the court. And the Bucks have shown that they've struggled in the half-court offense the entire time since they've been in the bubble. So, yeah, I think that this is a bad matchup for Milwaukee, and I picked the Miami Heat to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. I actually picked them to go to the NBA Finals out of the East, but, I mean, let's take it one step at a time. I just think this is a bad matchup for the Bucks.
And you had no Bledsoe, though, too, for Milwaukee. I know what you're saying, and I agree with you. It's not a, I mean, this is not – I mean, matchups make fights, and this is not a great matchup for Milwaukee. But, I mean, Milwaukee's been in this position before.
Sure.
So, I mean, they're still –
I've been on Clippers Milwaukee basically since the Clippers got Marcus Morris, so I'm not going to back off of it, but I get why people are thinking that way. I just wonder if it's a little jump of the gun. But you're right. I mean, when your best player is 4-for-12 from the line and you have that kind of stuff happen and you can't shoot, that's an issue.
And on the other side of the court, you got three guys that can shoot the lights out of the gym in Dragic, Robinson, and Hero for the Heat. And then Jimmy Butler has shown that he can close out a game. He had 27 points in the second half in game one. So I'm just saying, the way the Miami Heat play defense and then the way that they can shoot the basketball, they're going to be in every single game. And that's and just they have this underlying grittiness to them that I just don't see from Milwaukee. Miami will get scrappy. Like I saw that in the Pacers series. I don't know that we've seen that from the Bucks when they've been pushed this year.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough. I'm still on him, but fair enough. All right. Let's our guy Andy in Merrick is with us, and he's got some
good
hockey
today. Morning, DCR. I am a hurting Islander fan today with our franchise guy bleeding in the locker room. That said, I have a four-pack of hockey questions because it is hump day for Rico.
My man.
But before I give you those questions, I just got to push back real quick. There was a call for the end of my reign of trivia terror yesterday.
Well, the Royals-Kings, I mean, that was ridiculous. Let's be honest.
Well, let me just say this. ESPN Radio New York is the gold standard of sports talk radio. It's intended for intelligent sports consumers. If these callers want knucklehead sports talk radio, they can go to the other station in town. Let's go. Ready?
Well, that was a nice combination of kissing ass and then elevating yourself to a certain level of intelligence. That was remarkable.
I thank you very much for that. Let's go into Carlin's backyard. We're going into your backyard. We got four questions on the Devils. When they moved to New Jersey in 1982, can you tell me from where they came from?
Colorado. They were the original Colorado Rockies.
Correct. Can you tell me, since moving to New Jersey, how many Stanley Cups have they won?
Three, right? Right, Rick? Three.
Three is correct. Can you tell me the coach with the most wins in Devils history?
Is it Larry Robinson?
Most coaching wins in Devils history. Is it Lemaire?
It is Lemaire.
It wouldn't be Lemaire.
Good nice, coach. Rico.
3-for-3. And your bonus question. There have been 5 sweaters retired in the Devils organization history. A goalie, 3 defensemen. But can you tell me the one forward who's had his number retired?
Eliash.
Patrick Eliash is it. That's the way you do it, boys. Stay healthy.
All right. Well done.
Stay
Vince.
Healthy. I love it. He's like the – he is the Dos Equis guy of trivia. I love it.
Well put. 800.
And in the words of – and Carlin, in the words of Kirk Cousins, if I die, I die.
Yeah, when did Ivan Drago become Drago? Kirk Cousins, you know, really has turned into Drago with that comment. In case you missed it, Kirk Cousins came out and was on the Kyle Brandt podcast and basically said, I don't believe whatsoever in wearing masks for this. If you say anything as far as between, I'm sorry, I'm not phrasing it right. If you put it on a scale of 1 to 10, of 10 of I'm never leaving the house and 1 is masks are stupid and everybody is lemmings, then I'm a 0.001 or whatever it is. And said, I don't mean to offend anybody, but if I die, I die.
If he dies, he dies.
What he did is come out and make an ass out of himself.
Yeah.
Talking about not wearing a mask, and you know, I don't look at it as not disrespecting anybody else because I don't wear a mask. Put a damn mask on.
You like that?
Whether you think the virus is real or not, put a mask on, because there's 185,000 dead bodies in this country that tell you that the virus is real. Put a damn mask on.
But this
is
what
makes
such
a hard thing to do.
But Chris, I mean, this is what makes it so scary, though. I mean, especially in football, is because I don't think that Kirk Cousins is probably alone in that sentiment.
Oh, I'm sure he's not.
Well, and you're reliant on your teammates to consistently do the right thing to make sure everyone stays COVID-19 free. I mean, you may have the opinion that if I get it, I get it, I'll get through it, and if I don't, then I'm fine with that. But that, not everyone in your locker room shares those feelings.
And by not wearing a mask, you're being disrespectful toward how they feel about the virus.
Yeah,
you want to respect everybody and you don't want to call anybody stupid, but the reality is by not putting a mask on, you're putting everybody else at risk. That doesn't make sense. And if he has that opinion, how do you think the people that are in his household feel about the virus? Are they all doing the right things? Are they all taking the proper precautions not to bring that thing home? Because all it takes is for one guy in that facility to get it in there, it's going to run through the entire team.
That's what I don't understand that argument ever. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with everybody else that you're around. And somehow, for that fact of it to escape you, all right, you're not too worried about it for yourself, that's fine. It's respecting everybody else, that's it.
But here's the thing, though, Carlin. I mean, he's a quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings. Like, I mean, a quarterback is the face of the franchise. I mean, a lot of people pay attention to what he says. And by him coming out and making this comment, like, you're continuing to perpetuate an idea that's only going to continue to keep this country in trouble when it comes to trying to contain the virus. We're all trying to move past this damn thing. And by people not wearing masks, by people not abiding by the protocols, you're just continuing to allow this thing to drag out. Like, why would you want to set that type of example? That makes no sense to me. I hope somebody with the Minnesota Vikings organization is in his ear today saying, hey, man, you need to walk back these comments. Because this is not the tone that you want to set if you're representing a franchise and representing a city in the National Football League.
You know what's funny about it, too, is the Vikings, Rick, were basically the first team to take the media publicly through everything that they are doing when it comes to the safety of this. And now the guy who is the face of your organization basically says, screw it, no big deal.
And they have an older head coach, too. And that, I mean, to what you and Chris were saying, too, it's not just about you. I mean, you can have, you know, you can feel however you feel, you'll choose to feel about it, but it's not just about you. It's about the people that you're around every day. It's about the people that they're around every single day. And again, I mean, there are, unfortunately for Kirk Cousins, the people that are the most important as far as, you know, the NFL having a season or not having a season, do care about COVID-19 and would be concerned if, you know, you have outbreaks on teams and that how that'll affect your season. So even if you don't, I mean, even if to a man you don't believe the masks and everything else, if you want to have a football season and if you want to get paid and you want to be able to, you know, try to do the things on the field that you hope to achieve, then you got to make sure everyone follows the proper protocols to make sure this thing actually can work.
If there's one thing we know, Kirk Cousins does want to get paid. And there's no question about that. Every last
Yeah, but he's already, you know what, he's already gotten paid, and he got a contract extension this offseason.
Yep.
There's a lot of guys on his team that haven't been paid, that want to get paid. And if they have to shut this thing down because of players that have the same attitude that Kirk Cousins has, how do you think those guys are going to feel about that?
They're not going to take it well.
No.
Nor should they.
Don't mess with a guy's money, man. Like, that's why we have this code in the NFL that you don't talk about another player's money. Don't mess with a guy's money. And with Kirk Cousins saying what he's saying, and if that's his attitude and he's not willing to put on a mask and that's how he's going to approach this thing, if they shut this thing down, there's going to be a lot of guys that are pissed off about it.
All right, Giants, they bring back John Jalapio, who, of course, started at center quite a bit last year and then had that Achilles injury. That's the news this morning. Jordan Renan was the first to break it. So they try to get a little bit more depth on the offensive line, Chris. And listen, I thought he was okay last year in some spots, but he certainly wasn't great. He does just that, though. It's another body that at least has some experience.
No, it's another body with experience, but I think the Giants, you know, recognize that if he's your starter, he's going to leave a lot to be desired. They've been looking to upgrade that position, and Nick Gates has been the guy throughout training camp that everybody says they feel most comfortable with. I know Will Hernandez had a lot of glowing things to say about him, but, you know, that's one of those positions that we're going to watch because center is really important in terms of stability along the offensive line. We'll see what happens with Spencer Pulley. But, I mean, I think that it's between those two guys. I think Jalapio is more of a depth piece. But I think it's going to come down to Nick Gates and Spencer Pulley.
Rick?
No, I don't think excited. You can have enough. No, I don't think you can have enough depth. I mean, who knows with injuries, with COVID and everything else. I mean, you got a guy who, you know, has had experience. And you're talking about, especially for your young quarterback and what you're trying to accomplish this season, how important the offensive line is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Rick, I'm giving you a chance to get excited now. You know why?
Because Denzel Mims participated in individual drills today?
That's right, baby. He's on the field. He is actually on the field wearing a uniform, not running through team drills, none of that. Individual drills. Woo!
No, but that's where we're at. I mean, that's what you're actually excited about that. I mean, did you see how they finished practice yet? Did you see the names of the wide receivers that they finished practice with yesterday?
That's why I'm excited.
Yeah, but again, it goes back to what we've spent the last couple of weeks talking about is, I mean, what can you, it's hard, like wide receiver is not one of those positions where you expect a rookie with a full, you know, OTAs, training camp, preseason games and everything else to, you know, step in and have this, you know, immediate impact. Like it's not like a running back, right? Like you can't just take a running back, a wide receiver out of college and he steps in and all of a sudden he's, you know, he's your number one guy, and he's your best option.
That's rare.
It's rare, and then on top of it, now you got a guy who's just starting to do individual drills now, and we're, what, 11 days away from the season?
This is the point. This is how bad it's gotten, and you're right, 100%. And you know, Chris, I mean, with wide receivers to this point, they don't seem, even when they are at the very top of the draft, for the most part, with the few exceptions, they honestly, you can't expect a second-round guy, let alone guys that were in as deep a wide receiver draft as this was, to come in and be great right away. Even the top ones usually start to show up a little bit more in the second half of their first year.
Well, it's a different world in terms of the offenses that they're going to be in, the roles that they're going to have to play, and the defenses and the coverages that they're going to face. So there's a lot of nuance when it comes to playing the wide receiver position in the NFL, and there's a huge learning curve. And with Denzel Mims, because he's missed so much time throughout the preseason, like I don't know how much of a contributor he's going to be early on in the season. I don't. And you look around the skill position core, the wide receiver core specifically, and it leaves a lot to be desired. Like, you don't have a lot of playmakers. I mean, Rashad Perriman had a nice year with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but the guy can't stay healthy. He's only played all 16 games one time in his career. So what are the weapons that Sam Darnold is going to have to work with? I mean, you could make an argument that the best wide receiver that's on the Jets doesn't play wide receiver. He's your running back.
Yeah.
And Adam Gase hasn't used him a lot as a wide receiver or in the slot last season, or at least not as much as they used him at that position in Pittsburgh. So I'm really interested to see what Adam Gase comes up with scheme-wise to try to offset some of the deficiencies that they have with the playmakers in their skill position core.
That's the thing I never understood about Bell's use last year, Rick, is, you know, you had a chance to get the ball, and they got the ball in his hands a decent amount, but they had a chance to get the ball in his hands a lot more and with more open spaces, and they just didn't do it. And I get it. You hate having the guy on the team. You don't like him for whatever reason. But if he's there and you know what he's capable of doing, why not use that to your advantage and try to at least build up the guy's value, if anything else?
Well, because you have to be willing. The word that Chris used is the perfect word, is scheme. And there are some head coaches that believe it's more about X's and O's than Jimmy's and Joe's. And that's how Adam Gase coaches. It's his scheme, and there's certain ways he wants to run plays, and he likes how Frank Gore runs the football and doesn't like how Lev Bell runs the football. And that's that. He's not interested in finding what each player does really well and then, you know, working the scheme around those players because that's he's the smartest guy in the room.
That's why, to what you just said about Adam Gase's philosophy, Rico, that it's about scheme more so than it is about players, those type of coaches don't hang around the NFL long.
I said, but didn't I say this at the time when he got hired?
Don't.
I don't want. I get the feeling from Adam Gase that he's more like Chip Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah. How many years did Chip Kelly hang around? What, 2 or 3 years in the NFL? A couple years with Philly and then that
that
cup of coffee out in San Francisco?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they just don't hang around long, man. I mean, in the NFL, you've got to have talent. And I get it. Like, all the NFL players, the margin, the separation between talent level is small. But that makes a difference. That's the difference in you winning and losing games at this level. You got to have guys that can be difference makers. And when you look at the Jets' offense, you don't have a whole lot of guys that are difference makers. Hell, you don't have a whole lot of guys that are above-average starters. You just don't. So, I mean, I wonder how Sam is supposed to take this next step with the players that he's got to work with. Now, granted, the offensive line should be better. They changed 4 of the 5 starting offensive linemen 4 years ago, so it should be improved. But that offensive line has got to have some time to gel under live fire. And then those receivers are going to, you know, have to get acclimated to Adam Gase's system and being able to operate it in real time. Meanwhile, your quarterback is expected to be able to get this team to take the next step and to show that he's the legit franchise guy. I just think that it's bad timing all the way around. And the expectations don't change for Sam just because the organization didn't do him any favors.
And that's the thing, is that you're right. The expectations, clearly us as Jets fans have, you know, a higher sense of urgency than the general manager does, which mm-hmm. bothers me a little bit. But, I mean, you even heard it. I mean, you know, listen to our show as we go in and out of breaks and everything else. I mean, you heard the sound clip with the Lev Bell situation. I mean, the relationship between Adam Gase and Lev Bell, they can say whatever they want. They're saying it's fine, which I don't believe. But he said it. It's, you know, Lev Bell has a skill set, and he gets frustrated because Adam Gase shows an unwillingness to get the best out of what Lev Bell does well. Which is understandable. Any player would be frustrated by that. Like, I don't run the ball like Frank Gore. That's not who I am. Can we design some plays to accentuate what I do really well? And then
just
on top
get him
of it,
in space, get him in space one-on-one and let him make somebody miss. That's what he does. Create opportunities for that. Facilitate that. Don't try to jam a square peg into a round hole. It ain't going to work. I mean, he had the lowest average yards per carry last year of any Jets running back in the history of the organization with a minimum of 200 rushes. Like, that's how bad it was. Le'Veon Bell didn't fall off that much just because he had a year out of football. A lot of that had to do with the scheme and what Adam Gase was asking him to do. And I just, again, man, when you start having these question marks around why certain players aren't productive, it comes back to the coach. It always does, whether it's Sam or whether it's Lev Bell. It comes back to the coach. And I have a real problem with that when you're trying to develop a franchise quarterback when you got a question mark at the head coach position.
And don't forget, I mean, it's a bad offensive line too, but you're right, Chris. I mean, you got to blame the coach more than anything else for the way that they used him.
Well, if you got a bad offensive line, why are you going to run Lev Bell between the tackles?
That's
if it's a bad offensive line, why don't you throw him a swing pass? Why don't you line him up out wide and throw him a bubble screen? Take the offensive line out of it. Play basketball on grass. I'm just saying that there are ways to operate around having a bad offensive line, Carlin.
Yeah.
And you didn't see enough creativity from Adam Gase, or at least the awareness to understand, okay, I've got to try to offset some of the deficiencies along the line up front with some of my scheme. You didn't see that last year. You just kept trying to do the same thing over and over again, and it wouldn't work.
Streaming September 4th, Disney's new movie, Mulan. Experience the legend of Mulan as she fights to defend her family and the kingdom. They shot this in over 20 different locations in China, like the Singing Sand Dunes and the Mingxia Shan Desert. I mean, the Zhangji Danxia National Geological Park.
in north central China. They shot it all over China. It's everywhere, and you got to see it. It's available to Disney Plus subscribers who unlock premiere access.
Oh, man.
I'm trying.
I'm going to watch Mulan just because of that read.
Yeah, listen, I'm going to watch it, too.
I'm going to watch it just because of that read.
Yeah.
Rico's going to watch it because of the kids, but I'm going to watch it because of your read just
the
now.
The Zhangye Dangjia National Geological Park, of course, in north central China. It's basically Yellowstone. That's what it boils down to.
Oh, that was too good. Oh,
man. All right. How about Dancing with the Stars? Charles Oakley is doing Dancing with the Stars. Oak.
Oh, time out. Don't bury the lead. I mean, yeah, he's doing... Carol Baskin is doing Dancing with the Stars.
I'm sorry. Charles Oakley is the lead. Carol Baskin.
If you're a
is
judge, who are you more afraid of? Carol Baskin or Charles Oakley?
There's not a shred of doubt in my mind that that lady's husband is Tiger Tsushima right now.
Takes one to know one, OJ.
Yeah, I would probably put OJ on the list and then Carol Baskin at this point.
I mean, holy cow. I know that we should put Baskin first, but the problem is it's Oak. And I was so bummed out when I saw that.
Yeah, but I mean, Dancing with the Stars, it's a credible show. I mean, wait a minute. We all watch Dancing with the Stars.
You said you were bummed out? Charles Oakley. I think it's going to be entertaining.
Yeah.
That's going to be entertaining. That's much watch TV, man.
Well, I have a feeling Oak may not be on it all that long, but Carol Baskin, there's no question that happened. There's no question she took him out, right?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, especially with the death certificate being forged and not the death certificate, but his will?
Yeah, the will.
Cool, I think it was the will.
In case he goes missing. It wasn't for death. It was in case he goes missing.
Yeah, just in case.
just in case. Forge a couple signatures right here, and where we go. We're good.
What I do love is that whenever you get this Dancing with the Stars cast, is you just get the most random selection of celebrities ever. I mean, it's Carol Baskin, it's Charles Oakley, it's Anne Heche, it's Vernon Davis. I mean, it is a veritable cavalcade of stars right there that will be on it this year. So if you're fired up to see Oak, I guess I'll watch for the entertainment standpoint. I guess that's true.
Hold on. Is Nelly doing Dancing with the Stars?
Nelly is on it. Yes.
Nelly's doing it?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Country grammar in there. You should be all right at it.
All right. I would think so. They also mix in a couple of people that should be pretty good at it, too, based on what they do in the past. So
yeah.
We'll see how it plays out. Let's squeeze a call in real quick. Let's get Diane in. She is in Cedarhurst. Diane, what's up?
Hi. I just was calling to make a comment on what her cousin said about not wearing a mask.
I got like 20 seconds, Diane. I'm
sorry. Okay, I just wanted to say, oh, no, it's fine. Just that I lost my brother to the virus. So when people say that, it's extremely disrespectful to the family members of and also the people that have passed away. And people really need to realize this isn't the flu. It's not a hoax. And what the people in the people that passed away, what they have done to them in trying to save their lives, you would not want anybody,
Diane,
in your family.
You know, I hate to do it. We're running a little short on time. Could not agree with you more. Could not agree with you more. And well said right there. And our condolences to you and your family, of course, on that. And hang in there. But boy, you're dead on right about Kirk Cousins saying that. It's just awful. Meanwhile, that's going to do it for us today. Our thanks to Ray Santiago, to Brian Munguia, doing a tremendous job, especially with me being late to it here. But as always, this time I won't forget, it is Rule 76.
No excuses, play like a champion. It's DiPietro, Canty, Carlin, and...
everybody.
On 98.7 ESPN.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Kicks them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.